Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Forgotten Conservative. It is 7/28/2022, 0819 on a Thursday morning. This would be the third hour of a rare midweek podcast or recording. I didn't originally intend on going more than 2 hours, but I did feel somewhat incomplete. I hope, as far as hour two, that I do find something contradictory to what I've said and how I feel. If anybody knows or finds any information, again, please forward it to me. But so I think, at least for me, satisfactorily put that issue to bed. If anything else arises, good news or bad news in that regard, I will certainly bring it up in a future podcast. But I think it's important simply because it's a leading contributor to why we are where we are and have been, and why people on our side feel frustrated, defeated, especially when we take the abuse from the other side, from all angles, all issues. I mean, you know, you got the abortion on one hand, and then you got teenage boys going into girls' bathrooms and raping them. You got girls' sports at all levels, where this dude, Leah Thompson, whatever his name is, that just started transitioning a year or two ago, he's in college. Okay, assuming the normal progression, somewhere between 18 and 20. And he started his transition a couple of years ago, and he's competing in women's swimming, kicking ass. And it's like, wait a minute, didn't the Democrats bring up women's rights and how women were discriminated and blah, blah, blah for years and years and years? And now you're letting a dude kick the women's ass. Biologically a dude. I'm not going down the debate on that. It's for illustrative purposes only. But we wonder how we get here. These primaries are precisely how we have arrived, and at this point, number one, and why we feel so frustrated and aggravated and defeatist at times. Because we, for years, have thought, well, I go to the poll, I pay attention around elections, I go to the polls, I vote. Maybe not even knowing that if you'd have voted for a different primary candidate, you'd have had a better candidate in November. I said, I think it was Friday, that, and I've said before, the media has selected every Republican candidate since Reagan. And I stand by it. They selected Trump, gave him free airtime, even though he would sit at them rallies and point to the CNN or call them out. CNN, MSNBC, NBC, ABC, CBS, so on and so forth. They'd still give him airtime. Why? Number one, he was good for ratings, but number two, they thought he was the least viable candidate to defeat Hillary. That's what they thought. That's why they gave him free airtime. contribution in kind, as it's known. Because they just assumed that there's no way this dude could beat Hillary. Even though if you had half a brain, you knew Hillary is not a good candidate, period. She might be in New York with a smaller pool of a majority of like-minded citizenry, constituency, but she's just not a good person, a good personality, you know, and she's off-putting. A lot of people see right through the bullshit that the media has tried to portray of this woman for decades. This is why we had Romney in 2012. Not that Obama was particularly a great candidate in his own right. He was articulate in that he could deliver a hell of a speech. 2012 was the year they abandoned by choice, by decree, so to speak, made no bones about it. They were abandoning the white vote, especially white men. I've talked about it before. It was an open strategy. But the media helped select Romney. I talked about this maybe at the end of hour five Friday about Josh Hawley and this exchange with these abortion rights women a couple weeks ago. All over Republicans say he won. Kooks say she won. In my opinion, it was a draw. But it showed the weakness of Hawley. It certainly proved that he's not ready for prime time, so to speak, even though he has presidential aspirations. But he had the advantage. And these guys are just so weak. They're I don't want to say scared. But what the end result and exchanges like that just sickens me. Romney, you know, one of the things in 2012, he's being interviewed by George Stephanopoulos, who, if you don't know, not only worked in the Clinton campaigns and White House, was instrumental in tearing down, humiliating, spreading lies, whatever he could. Hillary was in that same war room of all the women that had accused Bill Clinton of sexual harassment, misconduct of one degree or another. Stephanopoulos and Hillary Clinton, along with James Carville, were the three that took care of those women. James Carville basically said of one accuser that not only was she trailer park trash, but that if I think something along the lines of, if you put a dollar bill on like a fishing hook and drug it through the trailer park, she chased it down, insinuating that her accusations were simply about money instead of any possibility that Clinton could be, you know, guilty to some degree of what that particular accuser was claiming. But that was their job. George Stephanopoulos, working now for ABC News, probably their lead political dude, was in the Clinton campaign and White House his whole career, you know, two terms, including the 92 campaign. And we're to believe up until they've quasi quit trying to hide it with Trump. But so he's talking to Romney. And I don't recall if it was a debate. I don't recall if it was a one-on-one conversation. But out of the clear blue sky, Stephanopoulos asks Romney, I think it may have been about contraception, women's contraception. And again, it was out of the clear blue sky. And Romney wasn't prepared. Now, I've said and maintained that not a Republican, but as a conservative, if you're in a situation like that, you're caught off guard, a question completely out of nowhere, you have to listen to the question, maybe have it repeated, to see if it's being asked under a false premise. But assuming it's a legitimate question and not, even if it is something to make you stumble in whatever manner, and it does catch you off guard, your fallback position is your core principles. If you believe and are firm and confident in your core principles, it doesn't matter what question, what order of questions, so on and so forth. Now, in that particular situation, I think Romney should have said, George, where's this question coming from? We're sitting here talking about something a million miles from nowhere, a completely different issue, subject. Where does this question come from? And why are you trying to divert from a topic or an issue that I think is a weakness for Obama that I'm trying to exploit, regardless of whether or not it is a weakness? But he asks you a question in this situation, presumably intentionally, to make you stumble. Just like Holly. And you don't grab back the power. You know, in politics, they sometimes use the metaphor of a football. You know, who has the football? Who's on offense? Who's on defense? And so many times in these conversations or exchanges in Washington, we don't take back the football. We don't take back power of the conversation and or the premise or question in general or topic or issue. We allow somebody either to set a false premise and then argue instead of saying, I'm not even going to discuss it because it's based on a false premise. Or we're talking about foreign policy. This dude brings up birth control, catches you completely off guard, and you don't call him out on it. George, that's a discussion for another day. Foreign policy is a weakness of Barack Obama, and I'm trying to exploit it. Lord knows half the time the Democrat candidate knows the questions or the general types of questions, which I fully believe to an extent. Again, maybe not a written list of the questions, but a general idea of what's going to be. In fact, there's some candidates who will not even allow an interview if they don't know what the person is going to ask, or at least topics to be covered. Flat out refuse. And there's even some that I've heard from reporters that have come out and said, hey, I tried to interview so-and-so to get their side of the story or their side of the issue, etc. But the only way he would sit down and answer my questions was if I sent him the questions in advance. I've heard that numerous times. Now, I'm not saying that you necessarily have to evade the question, because if you take back control of that conversation, if Romney had done that in 2012, he's going to be asked that question by the time the November general comes around. But you just acquiesce. You just, oh, okay, well, we were here to talk foreign policy, and now you've just changed it. So this is what I think about contraceptive. And his answer was just ridiculed, made fun of, just exploited. Because he, number one, wasn't prepared, which, shame on him. And probably wasn't confident in his core principles, number two. But most importantly, you allowed the other person to set the agenda, to funnel you, so to speak, into a topic that is not a weakness. It's probably, his position was probably shared by over half the population. But his response opened a door for criticism, ridicule, etc. Same thing with Holly. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. There should have been no question about who came out on top of that exchange. And he just let it slip right through his fingers. And I've talked about it. Mike Lee, U.S. Senator from Utah. The senior senator from Utah. Romney being the junior. Mike Lee is running for re-election. Mike Lee is one of five or so true conservative, provable, and I say provable by record, voting record, true conservatives, one of five or six roughly, in the Senate. Certainly less than 10. Romney is not endorsing him. Why? Because Romney is a McConnell stooge. McConnell gave him money for his campaign in Utah. Romney, or Mike Lee, won the primary, I think. So, I know he's got an opponent that used to be a Republican, quote unquote, who is no ifs, ands, or buts, a rhino, that has been given millions of dollars by McConnell-friendly groups, let's say. So when you've got a bona fide, dyed-in-the-wool, proven conservative running in the United States Senate out of the state of Utah, the Senate Majority Leader is in, now I can't say endorsing because he would never come out and say it, but is the man behind the curtain hoping that the independent wins. And if nothing else, as I've stated many times before, even if the independent doesn't come out victorious. McConnell is certainly okay with the fact if this dude can pull votes from Romney and prevent, I'm sorry, Mike Lee, and prevent Mike Lee from being elected. Number one, McConnell thinks we'll win and pick up a seat somewhere else, and this one will be a wash. And number two, if the Democrat does win and that one election puts them over the top in a 51-49 Senate, well, he's plenty comfortable of being the minority leader and not being responsible for moving an agenda forward. That's how that town works. That's how McConnell operates. And again, when Trump supports the same candidate as McConnell, it's alarming. It deserves attention. I mentioned, you know, I had planned on doing this third hour, that I felt like I just kind of felt incomplete. It dawned on me that I played that Tyler Childers song at the beginning of hour two. A couple weeks ago, we were talking about global warming and the coal industry and how these politicians for 20, 30 years trying to get us less dependent on coal, excuse me, and has talked about giving these people green jobs, factory jobs, so on and so forth, and how it's done a lot of damage to people in Kentucky, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and these people that went to these towns, these people that were elected, that promised they would take care of these families. When they achieved whatever it was they wanted to achieve, they just packed up and left town. I've mentioned my affinity for Kentucky music that started way before this and absolutely has nothing to do with it. As an example, I never was a fan of Loretta Lynn per se. She had that movie Coal Miner's Daughter. Never saw the movie. Couldn't tell you a lick about it. But it's something that they live that just comes through in that style or that area of the country in the music. One of my favorite older songs, even I think before I was born, Loretta Lynn and Conway Twitty do a duet. And the kind of description is they're dating and Conway calls her, the phone rings, and basically by the end of the song they're broken up. And it's just kind of how conversations can end up that maybe didn't start out or have the intention of getting to that point. It just, the ebb and flow of a conversation. But my God, Loretta Lynn's voice and the passion, the sorrow, you feel it. I mean, the first time, I'm getting chills just describing it. Naturally, getting all sentimental about it, I have forgotten the title, but it's that quality that attracts me to country music. Because not only in their lyrics, but you feel what they're conveying. And that tradition, that style just drives me crazy, and I love it. So a couple weeks ago, I played a Dwight Yoakam song, Reading and Writing, Route 23, that tells a story of basically a town, a kind of a generation that people had come up in the coal mines, families had lived and died, black lung, so on and so forth, and they were promised these new jobs and all this great money, and these people bought into it, and it caused nothing but misery. And they realized at the end of the day, they were better off, happier, simpler lives as coal miners. And even if it cut 5 or 10 years off their life, they had a better quality of life rather than this new stuff that was promised and that they regret. It was false and empty promises. Sticking along those lines, I heard Tyler Childers a couple of days ago, and I thought, you know, and I wasn't going to do it, kind of in part because of the whole the thing from Friday with the property and a theme song. If you guys hear that, that's kind of a portion of why I was hesitant. But just to kind of give you an idea of, and it, you may fast forward through the song, you may not like it, but that's telling that story that he told us in at the beginning of hour two, that Dwight Yoakam told us a week or so ago, that Loretta Lynn tells us in that phone conversation with Conway Twitty. As I Hang Up the Phone, I believe, is the title. I would encourage you to listen, even if you're not necessarily a fan or it's too sad or depressing or whatever. Just listen to her voice and how he's breaking up with her, and as bad as she feels, you can hear it, you can feel it. That's what draws me to Kentucky type music, and to know that these people have been lied to for the last 20, 30 years. And that there's so many suicides, people addicted to pills. And the dad just telling the son, do the right thing, stay away from the pills, and you'll be okay. Basically, along the lines of Jiminy Cricket, let your conscience be your guide. Just that simple, guys. Just that simple. Do the right thing. Don't lie, don't steal, don't cheat. And stay the hell away from the pills. And no matter what, you'll be okay. And it's just, again, that simple message, but the power, the passion that comes through in his voice. Anyway, that's why I felt compelled to come in here and start hour three to explain where the song came from and why. That's how you opened up in hour two. So I'm going to take a quick break, and I may end it here. I may continue, but I do need to take a quick break. And if I don't return, thank you for indulging, playing along, and listening to The Forgotten Conservative. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. I was starting to wonder if this thing was going to pick up, allow me to pick up where I left off. So I suspect there may be a brief pause. Nevertheless, I am going, obviously, I'm back. Probably going to finish out about another 20, 25 minutes. Doubtful I will go further after this hour. I talked in previous hours about, and then I guess that maybe at the beginning here, about these weak Republican candidates, how picking weak candidates in the primary leads to, obviously, weak candidates in the general. And that's one of the reasons why conservatives stay home at times in those years or elections that they have, because they recognize it, and whatever that mindset is that keeps them away from the polls, I've never really thought too much about it, because I'm, if nothing else, the old adage, hold my nose and vote, because it's better than the alternative with a Democrat winning that election. So, but even these weak candidates like Herschel Walker, Dr. Oz, that I've mentioned earlier this morning, and even the, maybe even if you're an incumbent, and I've certainly talked about, you know, one of the things about Trump was he was a fighter. He took control. He would dominate, so to speak, the conversation. Not quite, that's not quite the accurate way to put it, but he would own the conversation and or debate, discussion, when he would meet with reporters. One of the most one of the most accessible presidents in modern history, especially during COVID. Think about who we've got right now. Nevertheless, when I talked earlier about Holly and allowing the opposition to run with the football, to be on offense, or, you know, not setting the narrative of a debate and or conversation. Even these weak, or I should say weaker candidates that are already in the general, one of the things that they can do to improve their chances is, again, follow a Reagan principle, belief. I think it was the 76 Republican convention, which, you know, unheard of. Reagan ran against Ford, who was the incumbent president. It was a brokered convention. If you will remember 2016, Cruz and Trump heading toward the finish line, and everybody crying, woe is me, it's a brokered convention, potentially, etc. Well, so was 76 with Reagan. And by the way, the very first Republican convention was a brokered convention that I believe was settled on either the third or the fourth vote. And guess who won that brokered convention and went on to be elected twice as a Republican? Abraham Lincoln. So, nevertheless, I think it was at the 76 convention, Ford obviously won the nomination and called Reagan down, and One of the things, one of the lines of that speech that was so compelling that initially sucked me. That's how I became a Reagan fan, that speech. But he said, no pale pastel colors, bold colors. In other words, when people, the voters, the country, when they look at the choice between a Democrat and a Republican, whether it's national office, local, etc., don't be content with not as bad as that guy, or you don't want to offend, or you want to, this thing about the moderates or independents and all this tiptoeing that the rhinos tend to do. And Reagan was hated by the establishment, despised. In fact, I heard a story, I think it was in the White House, that going towards the November election in 84, during that season leading up to it, where the Democrats were duking it out for a nominee, a Democrat candidate, there were Bush 84 signs displayed here and there. So that's how bad the establishment disliked Reagan and fought against him the same way they did against Trump. And it's like, who's your worst enemy? Is it the media? Is it the Democrat Party? Or is it the rhinos and the establishment in your own party? Reminds me just thinking as I ponder that of Dante's Inferno when Dante finally gets to hell and discovers that it's not hot, it's actually frozen, and the devil is standing there half frozen in ice with wings flapping furiously. He's trying to get out of the ice, but the beating of his wings is actually what caused and created the ice. So it's a never-ending deal. The reason it reminded me, what's the worst enemy, the media, the Democrats, or those within your own party, is because in his hand, he had three figures from history, traitors, which, in the hierarchy of sins, traitor, betrayal, was considered, I guess, the worst of the sins. Judas Iscariot, I think Brutus was another one, and I don't recall the third. But in other words, these were traitors who betrayed the trust and loyalty of somebody within their circle. We all know about Judas. Brutus from Julius Caesar, the famous Shakespeare line, et tu, Brute. But the third one escapes me. It may come to me. But it's that three-headed monster, so to speak. The way these guys, any Republican candidate, from Senate, House, to your local dog catcher, when you get in these debates or you're talking to reporters or whenever, put them to the task. If you're standing at a debate and you're duking it out on the issues, and these I want to describe these reporters that appear under the guise of being neutral or objective, blah blah, that we know they're not, and they're not really separating the two. The candidate simply takes it upon himself. Tell me, Mr. Democrat, define a woman. What is a woman today? Tell me, Mr. Democrat, can a man get pregnant? Set yourself apart. Put him on the record. Tell me, Mr. Democrat, do you agree with the Democrats in the U.S. Senate, 49 of which voted for abortion up to, you know, a day before it's born, or potentially while the female's in labor after her waters broke? Because 49 senators voted in favor of that. What is your stance? Separate yourself. Show the difference. Because the American people is tired of this bullshit like that being forced down our throats. Do you think, Mr. Democrat, that a third year or a third grader should be subjected to LGBT QWERTY propaganda in any form? Even, you know, maybe don't even use propaganda, maybe literature or discussions. Do you think fifth graders or sixth graders should be made to sit there during Dick's drag show display? Put his ass on the hot seat. Make that Democrat candidate answer just common sense, everyday American questions that most of us is common sense. That's how you separate yourself. Even if you're a weak candidate, you're not afraid to take a position and take a stance. Not to mention if you can appear confident, and, you know, of course, all this is dependent upon core principles, because you can't expect to hit and not be hit back. So you have to be prepared. And again, like I said earlier this morning, when those questions do come out of the blue, assuming that you don't accept a false premise, and all things being equal, after you take control back and then decide to answer it, answer using core principles. Character, common sense, religion, faith, Bible, God. Because most of the times, that there's your answers. That's at least the answers that everyday average Americans are looking for. Not CRT, not teachers who literally will not give them a Tylenol or an aspirin, but won't hesitate to ensure that that kid is well-versed in transgenderism, and even if his or her parents disapproved, they will get you what you need to transition. Or birth control. Most parents, right or wrong, won't control of their children, what their children learn, etc. That's why parents across this nation have stood up and gotten fed up. It was such a loud voice, a tremendous grassroots movement, that the Attorney General and the Department of Justice had to basically say that we're going to consider them domestic terrorists and subject them to the same treatment as those from January 6th that are still jailed in deplorable conditions. And if that threat doesn't subdue you, which I've talked about in a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, FBI, government types, going to a neighbor, a family member, a co-worker, sniffing around, You come home from work one night, and there's a message on your machine from your sister or your next door neighbor saying, hey man, the FBI was here earlier asking questions. What's that about? If you can hear my phone in the kitchen, down here in Florida, probably having another silver alert. Nevertheless, that's where Republicans fail, because they're too busy where they don't want to offend a moderate or an independent. But I think it was Benjamin Franklin, or maybe Thomas Jefferson, in talking about nature, just in general, Mother Nature, the order of nature. You can chase Mother Nature out the front door with a broom, but by the time you get back and turn around, she's coming in through the back door. In other words, you can try to appeal to the less principled, the wishy-washy, the moderates, the independents, and take those type of stances for safety as an example, because you don't want to appear radical, or you don't want the media or the opponent to portray you as such. But because you so often have, candidates have taken stances and been advised, all that horse shit in my lifetime, the voters that they attract, moderate, independent, etc., if they did attract a portion or a percentage of that targeted voter, they lost 2, 3, 4 times that in their base, because they were afraid to take a stance, to display those bold colors. Of course, now it's to the point where the Democrats have, you know, gotten on the train to Coopville, progressive Marxist ideology, and are trying to march full steam ahead, with most of them not hiding it any longer. Come November, if you have an R behind your name, if you lose an election, you need to withdraw from politics. I would say, as a general rule, there may be exceptions in, you know, all blue districts, or say California or New York, etc. But that chick down in Texas, I don't recall her name, the one that, I think it was Elon Musk, lifetime Democrat voter, said he was finally voting for a Republican in a heavily, heavily Democrat area, district. Simple, common sense, American values, principles, and having the balls to stand up and articulate those values and principles. Simple things. You know, immigration. Until we can solve it together, and you can even say, until we can compromise. Just to kind of let them stew on it. knowing that you can't compromise with them, but just to offer it during a campaign. In the meantime, can we simply agree to enforce the existing laws on the books and to devote the resources at the border in these towns that are flooded, etc.? Can we at least agree to simply enforce the law? Lee Zeldin, running for governor in New York, Republican. I don't know if he's got a legitimate chance, but he needs to ask that woman that took over for Cuomo. What is a woman? Can a man get pregnant? He was at a campaign rally maybe last weekend or within the past week or so. He was attacked by some kook, you know, liberal, had some object, and he tried to stab him. Okay? A Republican candidate for governor in the state of New York. If you listen, you probably have heard, but if you haven't heard, this dude that attacked him, okay, on stage, on, you know, cameras, news, there's no question he attacked him and assaulted him with intent. He gets arrested, booked, I guess, all that good stuff, and he's released on his own recognizance because of the law up in New York and how unfair it is. Bail. People can't afford bail. What's the old effing saying that's been around forever? If you can't pay the time, if you can't afford the time, don't do the crime. What do you mean bail is too high? You know what the law is. Don't break the law. Yet these penny waste prosecutors, largely funded by George Soros and other dark money, are letting these criminals back on the street, even if they're illegal aliens. You bet your ass, if I'm Lee Zeldin, I'm getting on subways, trains, you name it. I'm traveling every bit of that state telling just that story. Do you want your committee, your community to have kooks, individuals like this, committing assault with intent to at least do severe harm, if not attempted murder, etc.? Do you want people like this arrested, booked, and released, awaiting trial in your backyard, in your neighborhood, your subdivision, your community, etc.? This is their policies. It's no longer what letters behind your name, D or R. It's no longer about that. It's bigger than that. And set yourself apart from that governor, who, again, in New York's case, that Holcomb, I think, is advertising for people who want abortions to come in. They'll fly in and put you up and take care of you. Show the insanity of that stance. And if Republicans would do that across this country, this will be 2010 all over again, where Obama said, we got shellacked. Because people were tired of the direction of the country. But you can't be a weak or a rhino Republican and expect to have success at the polls, unless you just live in a, like the chick in Alabama that Trump supported. She's a Republican. Alabama is going to elect whoever the Republican is. That's why I was so devastated by him pulling that endorsement from Mo Brooks and giving it to the rhino. just sickening. I mentioned probably earlier in this segment here about Romney not even endorsing Mike Lee. Mike Lee is such a conservative, as is his brother, who I think is a federal judge. Mike Lee is such a proven conservative, as is his brother, that either would make conservatives proud to be on the Supreme Court. That's who Mike Lee is. Mitch McConnell is funding a third-party candidate I spoke about earlier, and Mitt Romney, as of this minute, has not endorsed either candidate, which is, you know, make a decision, dude. Pick a side. You're either with us or against us. So, but if you don't set yourself apart, you don't demonstrate to your constituents the bold difference that it's not just fiscal spending or, you know, minimum wage. Those issues, that's a time far gone, far behind us. Concentrate and separate yourself on these radical new brand that's moving further and further left with the radical progressive Marxist ideology and agendas. That's what it takes. And make no mistake, gentle listener, as I'm sitting here talking about these Republican candidates, primaries in general, this fall, and saying or advising how to separate yourself, how to differentiate your principles against your opponent, I'm also speaking to anybody listening to this podcast. I'm not telling you to be aggressive or pick fights. But dadgummit, we can no longer afford to sit back and be quiet. I think we're, you know, I talked about at one point the event horizon. We're getting dangerously close to that point, folks. I mean, had Hillary won in 2016 and, God forbid, been reelected, it would be too late. Biden has 4 years. If we don't elect a Republican in 24, even a rhino at this point, it may be too late. So we have to do our part, because maybe we can do something to encourage somebody else or, you know, convert. So we can't just sit back in the cheap seats and criticize and lament our rhinos. We have to take steps and take action. Call your senator, call your congressman, call the White House, call your state representatives, your local city council, etc. Get involved. That's what I do. Anyway, I have definitely used up the rest of this hour. Again, thanks for playing along and listening to The Forgotten Conservative.